What's up? Welcome to NExpress, the Nintendo show of GoombaStomp.com. I am one of the hosts, Tim Mason. Here with me, I've got Ricky D.
What's up, Tim Mason? What's up, Nintendo Nation?
Patrick Murphy's with us as well.
I am with you as well, although I may not be with you when it comes to some of these games. We'll find out.
Uh-oh. And back yet again, Marty Allen.
Hey, guys. Always a pleasure to be here and to talk to you.
It's always really, really fun to have you on, Marty, and we're excited to have you on for this big episode. There's a lot to talk about, because not only do we have one of the biggest games of the year from Nintendo, Link's Awakening, the remake, out on the Switch now, which, of course, we've all been playing, and I'm really, really excited to talk about, but we also have a new mobile game from Nintendo. Those are a little less frequent, so that's exciting, and that is Mario Kart, finally out on Android and iOS now. And we also have a review from Rick on Sayonara Wild Hearts, which I'm really, really curious to hear what he has to say about that. So why don't we go ahead and start with Nintendo's latest mobile effort. There's a lot to talk about with Mario Kart. Starting with, I mean, overall, what are the impressions of Mario Kart? No controller. How are you guys feeling about it?
Well, I can tell you this. I played through the first cup, and then I promptly deleted the app from my phone, knowing that I would never play this game ever again. I don't know. But I did play through the first cup.
But Patrick, everybody says it's so bad, and I was really curious, and I wanted to like try it out, but I've been so busy playing a bunch of different games. But what I don't understand, and I really want to start here, is I was told that the game costs $5, but not just $5, $5 a month, like a monthly subscription to play the game, which, I mean, has Nintendo lost their mind? Because right now you can pay $5 for a subscription for like Apple Arcade, in which you can play, has right now 180 games.
Okay, so let me clear that up really quick. It's not $5 per month for the game. So the main game, and there really is a lot of content, I'm not going to knock it for that. The main game is free. Okay, so with that, you get 50cc, 100cc, and that's all free, and there's lots of cups, and you keep unlocking more, and Nintendo's going to keep adding more, and whatever. Like, you've got stuff to do, okay? You can get points, and you can unlock drivers and carts and gliders, and that's all free and grindy, you know, like a lot of mobile games are. You can, of course, pay to unlock things potentially faster, but you know, buying a currency, kind of like how orbs work in Fire Emblem to summon characters. Well, you can summon drivers and carts and gliders randomly, of course. It's a loot box thing. You can summon them through rubies, which are one of the game's currencies, I should say. There's also coins, but
there are like four kinds of currencies.
It's ridiculous, confusing. Mark.
Yeah.
But rubies cost actual money, so you can actually pay real money for rubies and speed up the summoning process. Otherwise, you can grind for coins, and they give away rubies occasionally, too. They'll give you some to be able to summon some things right off the bat. I summoned Peach and Baby Peach.
So where does the $5 a month subscription come from?
So what that is for is their Gold Pass, which gets you access to the 200cc races and also gives you, like, I believe it gives you an item a month or a card a month or something like that, or maybe a character. It gives you some extra perks, essentially, and it allows you to get increased rewards, I believe. So you're basically paying for an additional mode, which is the 200cc a month, plus a bunch of other perks. That would essentially, I mean, you're basically paying that $5 a month for the perks, which, look, we can get into how ridiculous that is and it is insanely ridiculous.
Well, again, but I have to ask, has Nintendo lost their goddamn mind? Because do you realize that if you were to pay $5 a month for an entire year, you've just spent $60, which is the price of Mario Kart 8 Deluxe on a Nintendo Switch. Yeah. And they're charging you for it for not a game. They're charging you for like just a few additional features.
It's triple the Nintendo Online Services charge, which is only $20 a year. And for that, you get a bunch of NES and Super NES games. Like, I just don't see anybody doing that, like being so into it. We should probably talk about how the game works, too, and whether anybody would even be into that. But yeah, in addition, so it's not like that $5 a month gets you everything the game has to offer, right? Because you're not going to be able to have, you're not going to get access to all the characters, carts, and gliders, which of which they'll add more because this is has some gacha elements as well. So it you could end up putting, I mean, they're trying to milk you, it seems like, at every turn here with this game. I don't like it at all. It makes me really kind of sad to see that Nintendo has done this, especially after they came out, you know, I don't know, wasn't it earlier this year, and said that they were not interested with Dragalia Lost. They weren't interested in gouging players, like trying to get as much money out of players as possible. Well, Mario Kart Tour seems built to get as much money out of players as possible.
Man, they're smoking some really bad crack over at the head office. Like, this is, like, shameful. This is embarrassing for the company. It really is. And I hear the game is terrible.
Yeah, Rick, that's the weird thing. Like, I mean, I'm a little aghast to put the thought into figuring out this payment method, because I played it and I found that the whole system for all the payment stuff is kind of opaque too. And I didn't even piece together how much it would cost, because I played it and I was like, I don't really want to play this game. it's just really, it's madness. I can't imagine anyone wanting to pay $5 period for the game ever. It's a bummer. It makes me kind of sad to play it. And I mean, to get into the actual gameplay, it hinges on automatic acceleration, and then you steer with your thumb. And I mean, it just doesn't work well. You know, it's just like, it's a poor man's Mario Kart. I tried to step away and think to myself, like, what if I just encountered this game if I had never played Mario Kart before? Because I actually like a lot of different iPhone games. I'm interested in that as a platform sometimes. And it's just not a fun mechanic. It's just this weird, watered-down version of Mario Kart. Like, the turning is inaccurate. I played past the first cup, and I won every single time. I guess I was online with other players, but I was just like, is everyone unbelievably bad? Like, I feel like you can't be bad. You're just constantly on rails. You can't go off the track. I mean, there's a few things to be said for it. Like, it looks good. It sounds good. It looks like you're about to play a Mario Kart track. Like, I was excited at the beginning of playing it, but then once I played it, I was just like, am I doing this wrong? Like, you move your thumb to steer the car, and then if you drag your thumb, you do a power slide, and that's it. And they like really simplified these tracks. And
well, there are two control versions. One is if you move left your thumb left or right, you can drag. That's one option. And the other one is move your thumb left and right, and you'll turn.
Yeah.
So you can only really do one of those two options. Like, there are two different control things, and you pick which one you want. You can change it any time, of course, obviously. And then for items, you swipe down to send an item behind you, and you swipe up to launch it in front of you.
Yeah, I thought the item mechanic was pretty good, actually. But I found the steering to be, like, miserable. Just, I mean, it was fun. Like, I got it to work with effort. And, like, I don't know if it's just years and years of playing. I'm a huge fan of Mario Kart, by the way. And I don't know if it's just years and years of playing, like, lent itself to understanding how I should be making turns and stuff. But it did not make the experience fun at all.
Yeah.
For me, anyways.
I've read a bunch of, you know, Reddit forums and stuff on this, and there are definitely people who are having a good time with this game, I guess. At least they're saying that they are. I'm going to take them at their word.
Yeah, that's cool. Good for them, you know. That's great.
Yeah, but for me, it just didn't feel good. Yes, it does look good. You're right. Like, it does look good, although I don't know about you, but I had a lot of lag during mine, and it's not even an online game, really. You're not racing against anybody online. You're racing against CPUs things, even though they have names and it looks like they're populating the your opponents or whatever at the beginning of a race. You're not actually racing anybody online.
I couldn't figure that out. I was like, why does it have like I it doesn't explain that at all. No. And so all of the names kind of look like you're in an online room because there's like names that are in different languages and stuff, but it doesn't, it really doesn't feel like you're playing with humans. Like you can kind of, you can tell, you know,
and, they might be taking people's names and then applying them to CPU racers, but yeah, they're, you're not actually racing any real people. So, I mean, it's very, it, so yeah, it looks good and whatever, like, but it's the gameplay that matters. You can get it to work. Like I completed the cup and I was first place in, you know, the three races that I did. And then they have a little extra challenge for you. The fourth event isn't really a race. It is some little extra thing that they ask you to do, a little challenge thing that teaches you techniques and stuff, which is very simple and short. But yeah, you can get it to work. It's just that it doesn't feel good. Nope, not at all. Feels like garbage to me. It doesn't feel fun. It's not a matter of whether or not I can do it. I can. Yeah. I don't want to. Like, that's why I just deleted the app, and I was like, just based on how it felt, I was like, I'm never going to play this game ever again. I don't want to play this game. It just doesn't feel fun to play whatsoever. This doesn't feel like Mario Kart. I don't feel any of the excitement of Mario Kart in it. It seems like it's going through the Mario Kart motion. It's ticking off certain boxes like, hey, you got an item. Hey, you can power slide. Hey, these courses look familiar, don't they? And there are a couple new ones. But, yeah, it just it's soulless, completely soulless, as far as I'm concerned. I know there's going to be people who disagree and who like this game, but it to me it was just it's a garbage app. Sorry to say, but it is.
Do you think that is because we are dedicated Nintendo fans that have played every Mario Kart title? Do you think that's why we
don't like
Tour at all?
I haven't played Mario Kart since the Wii U days. I didn't buy it for Switch, and I pretty much my history with Mario Kart is buy it, play it for like a month, and then never play it again because I've done everything on it that I wanted to do. Like I beat all the tracks and stuff like that. And I enjoy it for that month, and then I'm done with it, right? I don't really play the multiplayer. I don't go online. So it's not like I played Mario Kart I haven't played it in a long, long time. I was looking forward to – well, I wasn't looking forward to this. I was skeptical, but, you know, hopeful, optimistic. It just didn't feel good, Tim. Like, I don't know. To me, there isn't any one Mario Kart that feels good. I played the Wii version solely with the steering wheel attachment. I liked the motion controls. So I don't have any one way of playing Mario Kart. I'm just going to play it what feels good. If it feels good, then I'll enjoy it. And if it doesn't feel good, like Mario Kart Tour, like then I won't enjoy it. And I didn't.
Well, like, I'm not big on mobile games, but everybody over at GoombaStomp.com, when I say everyone, I'm talking about like maybe like 20 of our writers, all say the game is garbage. Like, they straight up hate the game. And the thing is, I think Tim brings up a good point. Like, the Mario Kart franchise is so beloved, and those games, like especially like Mario Kart 8 and Mario Kart 8 Deluxe and even the Wii version, they're really, really, really good games. And so I think that people are going to go in automatically expecting it to be great because it is still part of the franchise. Like, it does have the brand Mario Kart, but I just hear that the game just is not fun to play. Like, put aside how much it costs for the monthly subscription if you actually want to do that. I just feel like I hear that it's not fun to play. And I do wonder if, like, a casual gamer who maybe doesn't own a Nintendo console has never maybe played a Mario Kart game would maybe get some enjoyment out of this game. But personally, I don't really like mobile games. There are some really good ones, but it's just like it's just weird. Like, I was just curious because we do a Nintendo podcast. Do I want to play Mario Kart on my phone? No, not really. But at the same time, I was kind of hoping that Nintendo would actually deliver a good product, because it's now been about, what, 2 years since they got into, like, the mobile game industry. And there's, you know, like, I mean, Animal Crossing was okay. It didn't really go anywhere.
Fire Emblem's great.
Fire Emblem's great. Fire Emblem, but,
and,
like...
But and I'll go to bat for Mario Run, by the way. If you, this is a good comparison to make, because Mario Run versus Mario Kart Tour, right? Like, you're going to get a dumbed-down version of the game that's on autopilot, essentially, because Mario Run, he's just running straight ahead, and you just tap to jump, right? And Mario Kart Tour, you're automatically accelerating, so you just swipe to turn and use items. I will give Mario Run was infinitely better than feels infinitely better than Mario Kart Tour. Like, Mario Run works, not only works, but it actually, once the game started to open up past those, you know, the short amount of content that it had at launch, There were lots of things to do afterwards, and I actually ended up, because I enjoyed playing that game so much in little short bursts, I ended up getting every single coin, pinks, blacks, and purples or whatever, all of them, which is kind of difficult and takes a long time. Plus, I played all of their, like, I unlocked Daisy, which requires playing a ton of levels, a ton, because that game at least has a fun feel to it. Mario Kart Tour, I don't, there is no fun feel to it. It's just simply like they took the Mario Run formula, but it doesn't work for this.
I'll be curious to see if they actually make any money from the game. Because, like, Super Mario Run actually did very well. Like, a lot of people think it was a commercial failure, but it's not. Like, it actually made a lot of money. Maybe not compared to some of, like, the bigger mobile games, but it still made a lot of money.
Yeah, not what Nintendo wanted, but it made money. Yeah. And it was, look, that is a quality game. I can't knock Mario Run. You can knock for its lack of content, I guess, but for $10, actually, I know that even when I reviewed it, I was slightly disappointed. But then after that review, I kept playing it and playing it and playing it. And I have a greater appreciation for at least what they did there. When I'm comparing it to other mobile games, and especially with something like Mario Kart Tour, which is just kind of feels like a mess. Marty, didn't you feel that there are just like a ton of things coming at you all at once too, right? It's like telling you about all these items and coins and rubies and all these different things that you can do, and it feels like kind of a bit of a mess.
Oh yeah, it's just nonsense. I just didn't care. I was like, all right, let me just try this game out. And I mean, honestly, we're kind of lockstep on our view here for all the mobile stuff. I am also a fan of Mario Run, and what Mario Run boils down to is they found a simple mechanic to translate that game in that space, and it works well. I really enjoyed Mario Run, and it made me kind of hopeful for what they were going to do. And I actually the only one I have not played is Fire Emblem, but
so the best one you've skipped out on.
Well, you know, I'm still
it
not
is
a
the
full,
best one.
Yeah, I'm not a full convert to that series. I still haven't played the new one. That's a whole sidebar conversation.
Hear me out. I can take or leave Fire Emblem. I think they're fun, but they kind of like burn me out. I think the mobile app is maybe better for me overall because of the length of battles and because I can hop in and hop out so rapidly. It just like completely like was the perfect bite-sized amount of Fire Emblem in a given moment.
There's so much to do, too. There's so, especially now, oh my gosh, there's just a ton of different activities, different ways to fight, and different things that you can do. It's absolutely loaded. I mean, honestly, you never need to spend any money at that game, and you'll get 100, 200 hours if you want to.
That is interesting. I will, you know what, I will probably download it based on that recommendation. I've just never been interested enough in the series. I'm now interested in the series after hearing so many people, you guys included, speak so highly of the newest Three Houses. And I probably will go down that road at some point. But anyhow, that is an interesting sidebar. But yeah, I was reminded of Animal Crossing, which Animal Crossing and Mario Kart are two of my favorite Nintendo properties. And I just didn't like Animal Crossing at all. I felt like it was a weird, watered down version of a game that I loved. Nothing that I loved about it was translated well. And again, it just feels like it happened with Mario Kart. It boils down to this mechanic just doesn't feel good. Yeah, you hit it right on the head there. It just doesn't feel good to steer.
Not to drag out this conversation because we have a lot to talk about on the podcast, but aside from Fire Emblem, I think that I still prefer Miitomo out of all of them because Miitomo is still sort of like connected to your actual Wii U like account, right? Like, I wish they would find ways to, like, I don't know what's going to happen with Animal Crossing, but if that game actually connected in some ways to the Animal Crossing that we're going to get for Nintendo Switch eventually, that would be really cool. It would give people a reason to play the game to get extra characters or items or whatever. But I just hope that Nintendo finds a way to somehow connect these mobile games to the console games and or your actual My Nintendo account to whatever it is that you're doing with these mobile games, because it would give people more reason to actually want to play them.
Well, you're required to have a My Nintendo account in order to play Mario Kart.
But do you get anything from downloading Mario Kart Tour?
I didn't even look, Rick, to tell you the truth.
Yeah, I don't think so.
Because I don't care.
you can earn coins and stuff like that with the mobile apps. Nothing that actually translates into other games. But
no,
you can
get in-game items. With Fire Emblem, you actually get in-game items from your My Nintendo account.
Yeah, that's accurate, too. Yeah.
Rick, I love the Miitomo call out. I forgot about that game, and I loved that so much when it first came out, and that made me feel so hopeful for Nintendo's future, because I was like, this is so weird and so cool, and I got like all of my friends playing it, even friends who don't play Nintendo at all. It was such a blast, and it, you know, it just kind of fizzled out pretty quickly.
But I mean, that was an instance of once you learned that there was no core mechanics to the game, you were just asking questions over and over and over again. Yeah, I definitely burned out. But dressing up your Mii and playing little mini games, if they could have built up that and then allowed you to transfer your Mii into other experiences dressed like that, I think it would have taken off way more. But that's just the thing, is like all of these apps have been essentially the main experience of, say, Mario or Mario Kart. But you have to take away mechanics or take away features so that it's not the whole thing. It's not a free version of, say, Animal Crossing. It's the watered down version with Mario Run. You can't actually fully control Mario. He's going to auto run, but you get to control his jumping. And I feel like with Mario Kart, too much of the core gameplay is all about, it feels really good to steer these carts. It feels really, really sharp and responsive, and it's fun to drive. When you take away too much of that, the whole experience just falls to pieces.
But it's still disappointing because it's a Nintendo. And you know what, Tim? I played a game this week, which is one of my favorite games of the year. And you can play it on mobile. And it's fantastic. And if you want, it's part of the Apple Arcade subscription, which only costs $5 a month for 180 games. And it's called Sayonara Wild Hearts, which you can play on a Nintendo Switch. Marty, you're playing the game too, right?
I'm playing Sayonara Wild Hearts, though, apropos of what you just mentioned, I'm actually playing it on Apple Arcade.
Smart, because I actually had to spend $25 to buy the game, not knowing that you can get it as part of the Apple Arcade subscription, of which, again, costs $5. So I could have saved myself like $20. But here's the thing. So I played this game, and I just want to warn everybody. I think I started playing at 2 in the morning, so I downloaded the game, and I figured, you know what, I'm just going to test it out, and I'll play it in the morning when I wake up, and the next thing you know, it's like 3:15, and not only did I play for an hour and 15 minutes straight, but I actually finished the game. So that's kind of like right away, that's going to worry people, because the game is super short, and it's super expensive on the Nintendo Switch, but I still recommend this game. It is one of my favorite games of the year. And the reason why I think it's worth it, despite the price tag on the Switch, is because it's a sort of game that you can play over and over and over and will want to play over and over and over. And it's a great game to have when people come over. It's a great party game. This game is fantastic, guys. I could not believe it. Like, I think the thing about this game is the way to review it is just to kind of like say that it's an experience and you have to experience the game. Now, the only thing the game really has going against it is that I really do think that you will need to like and enjoy the music in order to enjoy the game. Because if you don't like the pop music, I can see people just like tuning out, not wanting to actually play the game. But man, this game is fantastic. Marty, like, how far into the game are you so far?
Yeah, I'm not too far. It's very interesting in light of the conversation that we're having about Mario Kart Tour, because I'm a little tempted to buy it on the Switch. Like, my takeaway from both of these experiences is, hey, I think I like playing video games with the controller in my hand. you know, it's a little tricky to get the nuance movement of your character on Apple Arcade. But what I played, I played probably a half hour, a bunch of boards. So according to you, that's about half the game. I mean, yeah, it's beautiful. You're absolutely right, though. You should like electro pop music, but I dug it. I kind of want to play it on the Switch now.
A lot of people are saying it's like just a rhythm game, but it isn't. Like, it's actually like somewhat of a platformer at times. It's a racing game. It's a shooter. It's whatever you want it to be. Like, it goes all over the place. It has this beautiful aesthetic to it. Like, the look of it, the neon pinks and yellows. It looks like. Have you ever seen the movie Tron?
Oh yeah.
Wait. Which one?
Legacy, obviously.
I would say, like, in terms of like the visuals, I would go with the sequel. But like, the visuals are just breathtaking. Like, it's stunning. Like, the game looks so good, it sounds so good, but yet it's so fun to play.
Explain to me how this game. I've seen the pictures of it, but I don't know what the gameplay is. What are you doing in this game?
It's no different than a rhythm game. Like, It's like, imagine like an Endless Runner that's a rhythm game. And so you play as this girl, and there are moments when you're just like running through the city and you have to like, run in a specific direction and step on certain points in order to like match the beat of the song. And okay. At times you actually have to battle like opponents. And to battle opponents, you have to sort of like tap on your controller, like tap on the A button, and you tap to the beat of the song, like to the rhythm of the song, and then you battle your opponent, which is, of course, the AI, right? There's all kinds of crazy, wild scenarios. Like, there's one point where you actually have ride a motorcycle, and there's another point through this post-apocalyptic, like, neon city. And then there's one point where you're riding on deer, and you're riding through the forest. You have to make sure you don't actually hit the trees as you're, and it goes super fast. And when you play the game, there's like a bronze medal, a silver medal, and a gold medal. And so if you unlock every stage with a gold medal, you will unlock bonus like material and bonus stages and bonus songs that you can actually play. But the actual game itself, like I barely died. It's not a super hard game. But I finished it in like an hour and 50 minutes. And there's like this futuristic sword fight. like I'm telling you, this game's amazing. It was like watching George Lucas's THX 1138 at one point. And next thing you know, you're like, it's like a scene out of like the movie Tron Legacy. And then it's like a scene out of Blade Runner. it's freaking amazing. And the weird thing though, it's like, I don't know if you've ever played Rez or Thumper.
Yeah.
Because a lot of people are comparing to those games, but the reason why I like this game better is because I actually prefer the music in this game. And I know a lot of people maybe don't like pop music, but I'm not into like the electronic music that you hear in those games, especially like Thumper. But in this game, like I kind of feel like the music is very similar to like those indie groups like Churches, for example. And I don't know, like I think there's like 23 levels, some of which are short. So when you actually start the game, like the first few levels can last you about 30 seconds, but they get longer and longer. The animations are smooth, they're satisfying. Like there's this one, I don't know if you got into this point yet, Marty, but there's this one point where it turns into like an old school version of Asteroids. So the game completely shifts, and instead of like running from like point A to point B, you actually control like the spaceship, and it looks exactly like Asteroids, but except the visuals are all funky and colorful. And there's this other level where you are controlling, like you're sort of like hovering around this man, this gigantic man who's wearing like VR, like a VR headset. It's just like you have to see, like, just, you know what, even if you're not interested in playing the game, like if you don't want to spend the money, I recommend just going on YouTube or online and trying to find like footage of it, because even just looking at it, it's just beautiful. And again, the soundtrack is just amazing. I think it was composed by Daniel Olson. I don't know what kind of music you guys listen to, but Churches is like the one group that sort of like comes to mind. Maybe even what else, like Pop Levy.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of a comparison. It's electro pop. It's cool. It's well executed. But if you don't like it, it's gonna get on your nerves.
Like Management is another group that comes to mind.
A little bit, yeah.
Yeah, and the weird thing is that I didn't know this afterwards. I was doing some research. Queen Latifah actually does the voiceover, because there is a story to it.
Oh no way!
That's so Queen cool. Latifah. Yeah.
Wow, that's super cool. Yeah, man. The more you talk about it, the more I kind of want to get it for the Switch, because like I can already tell it's just my type of game. You mentioned Rez and Thumper, which are two games that I'm super into, and it reminds me a lot of an older game, Amplitude. Any of you guys ever play Amplitude? It's like the early, one of the earliest games that Harmonix did before they did Guitar Hero and Rock Band.
No, but I haven't played it, but I know what you're talking about. I saw some footage of it because someone else referenced it in an article, so I checked it out on YouTube.
Yeah, it's a cool game. It's this like really specific kind of like side genre. This one feels, what little I've played of it, it feels like a little bit more, I don't want to say like on rails, but you know, like you said, like it felt kind of hard to die. Like, but the style is so awesome that you're really kind of enraptured. And you know, to your point earlier, Patrick, about like feel. Even though I was dissatisfied with the iPhone controls, I'd still like this game feels great. Like you feel like almost in that kind of, it's a weird comparison to make, but almost in that like Bayonetta way where you're like, I am doing such cool stuff right now. And you're not really doing much, but you feel like you're doing it.
But not in the astral chain kind of way.
I have not played Astral Chain yet, but yeah.
I mean, speak for yourself.
Feel is going to play into a lot of what we talk about today.
But the weird thing about this game, though, it is a game, but they did not set out to make a game. They actually label it an experience. I think they label it an indie pop album visual experience or something, like an interactive indie pop album.
That's cool.
Because that's what it is, because like the music was made, and then they made this game to accompany the music. And so it is like an attack rhythm action platformer. And you know, you mentioned harmonics. Like there's one like right at the beginning, it kind of like reminds you of like Guitar Hero at one point.
Yeah.
But like every stage is different, so it never gets old. I don't know, man. I'm in love with this game. Like seriously, like I'm telling you, you're playing the game and it's like you feel like you're playing Outrun, but this like really like advanced like remake of Outrun, like a 2019, like if someone remade Outrun, you know, like
yes.
The old NES game, right?
Oh, in 2019, dude, that's such a good reference. Yeah,
if
oh
they
my God.
Remade Outrun, there's like one stage and it's like you think you're playing Outrun, and then you're playing Space Harrier, and then you're playing like Rez, and then you're playing like Tetris Effect, and then you're playing like I don't know.
Yeah.
It's so amazing.
No, that's spot on. Yeah, I mean, it's really funny. Like, are you sure it's $25 on the Switch? Because like, I'm so tempted.
In Canada.
Okay,
so
okay.
Do not quote me, but like here in Canada, I believe it was $25 with tax. So I think for you guys, it's $15.
Because it's a really interesting sidebar conversation that like I can have it for $5 on Apple Arcade. I'm playing a bunch of games on that. I don't want to talk too much about it.
But here's the thing. The thing about this game, it's about the experience. So here's like, okay, so like my family came over because it was like my nephew's birthday. And I was like, you guys have to sit down and play this game. And so we're playing it on a big screen TV. I got the sound, like, you know, I got my sound system and I got the sound like at full volume. So I'm blasting the music and you have to just experience it. And I can't imagine having the exact same experience playing it on your mobile device. Like it if you like playing this on, I don't know, if you're playing on your cell phone or like an iPad, if you like playing it on an iPad or a cell phone, you're going to absolutely love it playing it on a big screen TV. It's amazing.
Yeah, I don't want to like sidebar too much onto Apple Arcade because we're on a Nintendo podcast, but it's like I'm really interested in it and I've been experimenting with it. And there are so many games on it that I'm like, oh man, this is great. And I wish I was playing it on my Switch. It's really interesting. And honestly, this one, I'm convinced. I think I'm going to just pick it up on the Switch. Like, I would rather be playing it on the Switch. It's kind
of
funny.
For the benefit of our listeners, it is $12.99.
Cool. I'm definitely getting it. Thanks,
which is like $200 Canadian. Yeah, highly, highly recommended. It's on my top 10 of the year so far. It is that good. Like, it's right up there with Link's Awakening and Fire Emblem Three Houses and Resident Evil 2. I love this game. I love it.
So with that super easy transition, thank you, Rick, for the review and for the transition. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll find out what the rest of us think of Link's Awakening. So don't go anywhere. So far, we've got one mobile game that no one was super into. We've got another game available on the Switch and Apple Arcade. That's free for you, Apple. We're going to advertise for you, I guess, this week. Sayonara Wild Hearts, we really like that one. But we also have a new AAA title on the Nintendo Switch. Is new the right word? I'm curious how you guys feel about that. It's a remake of Link's Awakening, and... Why don't we start with Marty, because just during the break, you revealed to me a very, very fervent fan of this particular title, that this is your first time playing Link's Awakening. You missed it on the Game Boy entirely.
I did, and it's wild that I missed it, because I am a really big fan of Zelda, like all right-thinking humans, and I'm traditionally I'm a bigger fan of top-down Zelda games. Arguably my favorite game of all time is Link to the Past. I've played all of the other games on Game Boy, and this is the one that I missed. And I knew I had missed
it. Insane, by the way. Can I tell you that you played the other Game Boy Link or Zelda games and not
I played Oracles. I played Minish Cap, Spirit Tracks. What else is there?
Phantom Hourglass was on
Phantom Hourglass.
Link Between Worlds.
Link Between Worlds was my favorite game on the 3DS, maybe my favorite game of that year. Link to the Past is probably my favorite game of all time ever. So when this got announced, I was like, oh man, do I finally play this game before it comes out, or do I wait till it comes out? And I waited, so I'm playing it, but I'm actually only midway through the game. But it's really thrilling for me to be playing what is for me a new top-down Zelda game. And yeah, I don't know, the short story is I really love it. It's fantastic. It certainly does feel, I can feel that it feels like an older Game Boy Zelda game. Like, I've played enough that I can like sense those like kind of like older trappings in there. But I also don't care, and I love it. And I really love the world. I can't believe I missed it, honestly, because it's so weird. It's really just my vibe. It's like it's in that like dark crack of the Zelda world that I like best of all, you know, when things are kind of like not quite right. And yeah, I'm totally digging it.
It is perhaps the most abstract and artistic of all the Zelda games, definitely. I feel like it's a battle between Link's Awakening and Majora's Mask, which is the black sheep, really.
Yeah, I was going to say Majora's Mask. I actually listened to our original review, which we did on episode 53 way back in 2016. You can still find it on the website. And On that show, we kept on going back and forth between Majora's Mask and Link's Awakening in terms of like story ending, characters, and the aesthetic. I will say this, Marty. I think if there's one thing that everyone can agree on, I think, here on this podcast, that Link's Awakening does better than every Zelda game, it's the ending. So wait till you get to the very end.
Oh, cool. That's really exciting, because I love the world. I love the characters. I'm like only halfway through the game, because I'm truly savoring the experience. I was utterly thrilled the day that it came out. You know, it really felt like New Zelda Day to me, which is like a national holiday in Marty World. So yeah, I'm just like loving every minute that I can find to play it.
This is in the N-Express Hall of Fame, and I believe I did the write-up for it. And I'm just going to come out and say it. Like, I've always said Link's Awakening is my favorite game of all time. And this absolutely is the quintessential way to play that game now. I feel like this is just the same game, but better. It's more attractive. It plays so smooth. It plays so well, but it still feels like the same game. The bone structure is still exactly identical. But it's like, it's so quintessential top-down Zelda. And I feel like it's not built in the era of hand-holding. And I know that Nintendo is like pushed away from that now, with Breath of the Wild was a little bit more obtuse. But this one is definitely like, they tell you where to go for the next dungeon, but that's about all you're ever going to get. And I kind of like, I don't ever realize how much I miss that until I'm back in it.
Wait, that's not true. There's a lot of hand-holding, though. Like, if you go visit the telephone booth, each and every single time you go, it will tell you like a clue for whatever it is you're struggling on. It's not necessarily just the dungeons.
Oh, definitely. It'll give you
a... You don't have to do it, though.
Looking for it.
Yeah. Tim, I got a question for you, because it is your favorite game of all time. So I think there's a lot of quality of life improvements here, guaranteed. Like, just the fact that you don't have to keep on going to your menu to switch items,
for example. That's the biggest one, for sure.
That's the biggest one, by far. The biggest one. So Marty, in the original, I'm sure you know this, but you would have to go to the menu to switch items like every 30 seconds.
Yeah, I can't imagine that. That would be very annoying.
Yeah, but my question for you, Tim, is, so here you have like a widescreen presentation, right, of a game that's really originally like 4x16, like you got, it was the box look. So when you're playing the game, do you think that it matters or it adds to the game or takes away from the game? Because there are moments when, like, I'm walking and I reach, like, say, like a wall or the end of, like, the forest, and I could see what's on the other side. And I feel like that takes away from a lot of the mystery. And also, like, it does at times show you where things are hidden. And so you don't really, like, discover it for yourself. You know what I'm saying? Like, you can, like, walk to the end of, say, like, a forest, and then you can see you can see to the next section of the map, and you'll see, like, there's a heart container on the other side.
See, but I what I really like about this game is that it's, like, this constant tantalizing feature where you're, like, always looking just ahead, and there are so many times where I, like, as someone who has played this game a lot of times, I'm, like, just sitting there, like, chomping at the bit, waiting. I'm like, oh, man, I've got to get the hook shot, and I've got to get my flippers first. Like, this is going to be a painful wait because I can see that heart piece right there, and I want to go get it. And I kind of like it. I like that you don't ever solve the riddle outright. Sometimes that's one of the great things about this game is, like, sometimes they're just hidden in plain sight, and it's not as simple as, like, oh, what tools do I need to actually acquire that heart piece? It's like, how do you get up there? How, like, I thought I was at the top of the map. How do you get to that heart piece? I didn't realize there was a secret trail. And I kind of like that they tease you in that way. I feel like this game does that really, really well. They used to do that with a lot of the old Zelda games. I feel like you can always kind of see something in the distance. And I feel like this game achieves it really, really well. The transitions between screens are very, very smooth. I like the widescreen.
Oh, I don't know about smooth. I'm not one to nitpick about this. I know a lot of people are complaining, but there is, like, a drop in the frame rate when you go from one section to the next section. Okay, so I'll let Patrick cut in, but the thing is, I honest to God only noticed it, and maybe it's just me, because I just, like, fell in love with this game all over again, and I love everything about it, which I'll get to, but I only noticed it when I went into the mysterious forest.
How are you playing? Because this is interesting, because I've heard this complaint as well, and I'm not just saying, like, maybe I do have, like, eyes for my darling all over again, and I'm choosing to ignore her flaws, but I legitimately haven't noticed any dip in frame rate. But I've played exclusively in handheld mode, because how the game, I know it's cool that I can play Link's Awakening on the TV, but in my head, I'm like, it's a Game Boy game, I'll play it on the go.
But it's not anything that takes me out of the game. And again, I've only noticed it one time. And I actually finished the game right before we started recording. But it does go from, like, 60 frames to 30 frames. But everyone's complaining about it, and I've only noticed it one time.
It's really interesting, guys, because it's noticeable for me. It doesn't bother me. It's not taking me out of the game. In some ways, it makes me feel kind of like I'm playing an old game. But, yeah, there's a lot of action on the screen. There's definitely dips.
Okay, wait. It's not action on the screen, Marty.
Is that not what it is?
This is something that occurs every time you walk into a building, out of a building, into a new area. This is not a too many things on screen issue. It is a loading issue. Every time the game needs to load a new area, and you know when you're entering a new area because the name of the area always pops up, there is a dip from 60 to 30. And it is not something that's going to bother everybody. And I'm normally not bothered by frame rates, but it bothers me in this. I also think it's inexcusable for Nintendo, one of the biggest video game companies in the world, to remaster a game like this that is not big. I'm sorry, but it's not. This should not be labor intensive for the Switch. I think it's a disappointing, even though, okay, I want to preface this. I wrote the review, and I wrote a positive review for this game. I do feel it is the best version of Link's Awakening, but it is a far cry from the ultimate version of Link's Awakening. This is not Wind Waker HD for the Wii U, which was basically taken to its logical conclusion. You couldn't make Wind Waker any better than Wind Waker HD. However, there is a better
Link's Awakening. Excuse me, Wind Waker HD VR coming out next year.
There is a better Link's Awakening version. There's a better Link's Awakening version that plays better and that looks better. So they made this beautiful looking world, except it gets blurry every time you transition areas because the frame rate drops. Now, again, it's not going to bother everybody. And I never thought, I can't think of another game where frame rate drops have really bugged me. Never bugged me in Breath of the Wild. That's a 30 frames per second game, and it dips down occasionally in, like, the Korok Forest and other places. never bothered me. But these drops from 60 to 30 are so jarring, it ruins the visual aesthetic for me. So I don't feel like I'm having this nice little dreamy trip. I am reminded constantly that I'm playing a video game because of these frame drops. And add to that, I also think I want to get my other complaints out of here before you guys all rebut that, is that I do believe that this game doesn't play as well. I think that Link Between Worlds set the modern standard for top-down Zelda the way a top-down Zelda should feel. First of all, that game was 60 frames per second. That was on the 3DS. It just was buttery smooth. Link could move in any direction. Everything, all the combat was so tight. That was the best feeling top-down Zelda game that there is. There is no reason why they shouldn't have been able to recreate that feeling for Link's Awakening as well. And I think what we end up here is kind of, like Marty said, it feels like an old game when it shouldn't at times. I get that the layouts are the same and the puzzles are the same. I actually love that. This is a great game regardless, and I'm definitely not saying this is a bad game. But I'm just pushing back a little bit on positivity. I certainly don't think it's an amazing game. I think it's a port that did enough to make the original better, but it could have gone so much better. It's clunky, it's awkward, it's got the frame drops. They did not do a great job with this.
Totally disagree. I can't argue with the frame drops because it is there, but I disagree with everything else you're saying, Tim.
So it's fighting, the sword swinging, like there were times when I would hit two characters. The sword the sword would swing through two characters and it would only hit one and the other one would be fine and then end up hitting me. That it should never happen. Then other times it hits both characters. There are a lot of little weird little quirks in this. There were times when item drops would get stuck in the geometry. It just has a lot of just fuzzy edges, a lot of flaws. And that to me is not a signal of Nintendo quality.
What I will say as my counter is that I understand what you're saying because it does feel like they stubbornly adhered again to the bone structure of the original. You are using a D stick, but it's still insanely like you're still on a grid, right? You can make diagonal movements, but you can't really go anywhere between those diagonal movements and the straight up and down, left, right. That there's still very much, you're very gridlocked with this game. And I like that they adhered very much to the style and the play of the original game. It's just the original game, but it looks better and there were some improvements. And I personally like that they didn't make a new game. It's not Final Fantasy VII Remake. It's not a new game. It is Link's Awakening.
That is why I completely agree with you and disagree with Patrick, because the whole entire map is built as a grid. Like the actual layout of the game, the way the game is structured from every room from the whole entire map, it's structured as a grid. So that is the way the game was made. This is a remake from the ground up, but it doesn't necessarily mean that they want to change the way the game functions or the layout.
But they did. They did. They it's a free-flowing environment now, whereas before it would scroll over. That's a big part of it. And you're talking about, like, so they changed it. And you can walk diagonally, which was not in the original game. They changed the gameplay. Guys, they made a different game. I'm sorry, but, like, they didn't keep it exactly the same, only give it a fresh coat of paint. They changed the way it played. Now, if you're going to change the way it plays, go all the way and make it as good as you can. They did not do that here. They half-assed it.
To be positive, so we don't lose our listeners, I think this game is amazing. I really do. I think it's one of my favorite games of the year. I have absolutely no problem with the combat. I did read your review, and I had to actually look at that sentence twice. Because the problem with this game for me is that I never die, which is a good thing because you get the original ending. But I feel like the game is way too easy. So I'm not sure how you had a problem with the combat. Here's the thing. I just want to balance out this conversation because I really do think that, like I said, the problems are there. Like, I can't defend, for example, the frame rate drop. But I do think that this is a really, really good game. And I'm going to bring up a comparison to the Twilight Princess High Definition Remake that we got on the Wii U. And on that podcast, my biggest complaint about that game was the fact that I spent $92 to buy a game which is essentially exactly the same as the original version. And here, a lot of people are complaining about the actual price of Link's Awakening because it's a full price Nintendo like first party IP, but I feel like it's worth it, and they justified the price tag because they did build the game from the ground up. Art or flaws, yes, the game is not perfect, but I really do think it's an incredible game. And despite the flaws, what makes the game great, again, is the characters, the story, and the ending. And I don't think there's any Zelda game that ends as amazing as this game does, where when I reflect back on it, I just like have such an emotional attachment to everything that just happened.
Oh man, I can't wait. That makes me so excited. I mean, what's really interesting for me about this experience is that right before, leading up to the release of this, somewhat by coincidence, but I'm sure it happened for many people, I was playing a ton of A Link to the Past, and then that inspired me to play a bunch of the original Legend of Zelda on the online service, and I totally fell back in love with the original Legend of Zelda, and so some of the like kind of crankiness of the movement actually reminds me of the first one, and I was just like, I don't know, I was obsessed with regular Legend of Zelda again pretty recently, and now I'm kind of imagining them doing that treatment to the original one too, and I would be totally into it actually. I'm having a blast, so I do perceive the flaws that you're mentioning, Patrick. I have seen them, but it hasn't taken me out. I'm also a hardcore gamer, so to some extent if something makes me kind of feel like I'm playing an old game, I like it. I don't know, it's a funny experience, but I love it.
I can understand where you're coming from, because it isn't as smooth as something that came out on the 3DS years ago, A Link Between Worlds. But as someone who is very, very attached to the original, maybe more so than the colored remake, I really, like, I'm brought back to why I like this game so much in the first place, because it does feel like the perfect transition between something like the original Legend of Zelda and something like A Link to the Past. But I'm so thankful that they decided to do something completely original and distinct. There's nothing like Link's Awakening, from the narrative to the world to the combat itself. I'm so all about Rock's Feather. It's unreal, because there's no other Zelda game that lets me straight up dodge enemy attacks and enemies themselves and continue to fight. And it makes for, like, while I can understand the complaints of the combat, it also allows me to be far more acrobatic and far more daring as Link than almost any other Zelda game. And I really, really like that. It's a lot of fun. It almost feels like, you know, those command responses that you get in Wind Waker, where it's like press A and Link does like a cool dodge roll and then slashes them in the back. I feel that with Link's Awakening, but it's all like I'm controlling it. It's when I decide to jump at an enemy and then come down with a down slash. And there's something special about that. Yes, it does kind of feel antiquated, but that's like half the charm. Then you give it the new art style, and I feel like you just have a game that might be dated, maybe, but it's charming as hell. I feel like it is a perfect encapsulation of what the Game Boy game was. Maybe if not physically, then spiritually, and that's important.
Yeah, I don't think it's a bad game. I think it's a good game. Zelda Link's Awakening always was a good game, and this game has the original Link's Awakening in it, so it's still a really, really, really good game. I'm just pushing back because I don't think that this isn't the best version that they could have made of this game.
Why do you think there is a frame drop? Because Nintendo is known to not sort of like have these problems in their first party games. I don't understand, because it has to do with the loading time, which to me like boggles my mind.
Grezzo made this game, and they did the 3DS ports for Ocarina of Time and Majora's Mask. And they may have done something else too. I don't know. I don't think this was made in Nintendo, you know, in-house at Nintendo. I don't know why there's the loading time problem. I honestly don't see. That's another problem. I don't see, with Breath of the Wild, I can see where loading times come into play. I don't see where they come into play in a game like this on the Switch. Link Between Worlds could run at 60 frames per second, and that was a pretty visually good-looking game for the 3DS. I think that game pushed that hardware a little bit, and it was running at 60 frames. I don't see what the problem was with this. I have no idea. But I wanted to ask you guys one other thing, because you talk about how, Tim, you said it was the perfect encapsulation of the old game. See, I don't get the same feeling that I get when I play the black and white Game Boy version. I feel like that version has got more melancholy undertones, and that the art style in this, even though I think it's beautiful to look at times, I think it's so cheery that it detracts from the original feeling of the game.
See, I never played the original. I played a DX, which is technically a remake of the original. And this is a remake of DX, because in the original, you don't have the color dungeon.
Yeah.
At least not that I know of. No, so there's things in this game that comes from the DX version that's not in the original. And so, like, I don't know. I can't really speak for the original. But the thing about the art style, which was my next question, the reason why I like the art style is because, like, I know when they first show the trailer, a little teaser during one of the Nintendo Directs, a lot of people were saying that they wished that the whole thing was, like, animated, like, the actual look of it, like, the opening animated cutscene. And I think I would really, like, I mean, that would look beautiful to play, but I don't think that would capture the spirit and the tone of the original game. So I like the way the game looks similar, but it's still not the same. Like, it's an updated version, but I do think it captures, like, the spirit. Like, it's just the way, like, Link looks and all the characters.
He looks like they did a more detailed, fleshed out version of his sprite and all the sprites for that matter. And I bought the Dreamer Edition, which was like an extra $10, but it came with this gorgeous art book. And you can see some of the, like, there as they were, like, working through it and trying to choose, like, what Link should look like and what all the other characters should look like. And they ended up with something that looked far more like the sprites than it could have. They had some more, like, cartoony looking ones or just, like, more detailed ones, but they went with something simplistic. And I feel like it captures that sprite look, but it's not sprites. And I really, really like that a lot. I'm really glad this isn't just Toon Link again, because I feel like for so long, their answer to everything was just like, oh, it's Toon Link this time, or oh, it's another Toon Link game. And I feel like Toon Link maybe got overdone, and I love Toon Link, and I think he looks great, but I love when they do something new, and this feels, it feels new, and I love this art style now, but it's still very true to the original.
You know what's new, and I need someone to explain this to me. There's a dungeon builder in this game, which I haven't actually, like, tried out, but I'm confused about it and how it works, but I'm also confused because, like, the actual character who you have to go to in order to create these dungeons, he, correct me if I'm wrong, but isn't he, like, the only character that is featured in other Zelda games, but for whatever reason they decided to include him into this game? Because, like, the whole thing about Link's Awakening is that the whole game is supposed to feel like a dream, and it's not actually real, and so it's completely separated from the rest of Link's universe, but then they bring him into the fold.
I mean, Link's Awakening is this anomaly in that, yes, it is separated from the rest of the Zelda franchise. You don't see a lot of the mainstays, but you do get some name drops, but it's also got a lot of strange cameos from Mario and other, like, Kirby characters. So it's in that way, it's, like, closer to some of the other Nintendo titles and franchises. And so it's, like, this really, really fun experimental game. And so I'm trying, like, Dompei, I don't know how you're supposed to say his name. He looks really familiar, and I'm, like, couldn't quite figure out which other game. I probably should have looked it up, but again, yeah. I was too busy just, like, getting into the game.
He's from something else. I can't remember.
So Dompei is the character who was in Ocarina of Time.
Oh, yeah.
Link's Awakening, obviously, in this game. Majora's Mask, Four Swords, which I never played, a Minish Cap, and A Link Between Worlds. So he's been in a lot of games. Anyhow, I just bring it up because I was wondering if there's any other characters that are featured in this game that have been, that made cameos or appeared in other Zelda games.
I mean, some people would debate some. I mean, like, you have some spidery characters that are very, very similar to, like, Goma. You've got, I want to say, you've got some, like, the Thwomps from Mario kind of show up in this game and are later a boss in the Oracle games. So, like, there are some recurring characters, and I think they name drop Zelda more than once. But again, it is pretty unique. It's pretty separate from everything else, despite being on the timeline. I can't remember which timeline it's on, but it is a direct sequel to one of the games.
To Link to the Past.
I thought it was Link to the Past, but I wasn't sure. Yeah. And it leads into Oracles or something. I can't remember anymore.
I think Nintendo changed that, something around with that. I don't remember how.
Dude, good for them. But can I hop backwards in topics really quick? Because we, like, had asked why there were some issues with this game. And I've got a theory, and I think you guys will probably agree, and I just want to get a quick, like, perspective. Do you guys feel like top down or like the portable games tend to be like there's clearly an A team and a B team with almost every Nintendo property nowadays? And now that top down Zelda isn't like what people are here for primarily, like some of the older players like us are super into these. Then this is probably going to be my game of the year. I can't help but feel that this is still like the B team. You know, the A team's busy on Breath of the Wild too. So like, I feel like maybe they didn't have their hands as full, or they had to put all hands on deck with something like Wind Waker because the Wii U was under such rough shape. They needed to like appease fans, or they felt they needed to. So I feel like we kind of got this exceptional remake in Wind Waker. So I kind of get where Patrick's coming from, but that almost feels like it was an A-team effort. This feels like it could have been the B-team Zelda team and not, you know, what all the real creative types, all the, like, strongest developers are probably working on.
It was Brezzo.
Yeah.
Which is another company. That's not Nintendo. I mean, Nintendo owns them, I think. I am positive about that. But yeah, so it wasn't even really Nintendo's in-house guys. It's not like a Link Between Worlds never felt compromised in any way.
But I mean, that was also, you know, when you are working really, really well within your limitations while still pushing the boundaries, which is what that game was, then I feel like it usually turns out a better product. I don't know that it doesn't feel like they were ever pushing the boundaries with this game. And it doesn't feel like they were, I don't know, because the experience, again, like, Link's Awakening is really, really compact. It is absolutely chock full of like mystery and discovery. And that's one of the reasons that I love it so much, is that it doesn't feel too expansive and it never felt like it needed to. But because of that, I think that it does kind of bring up this question of when there are stuff like frame rate dips, it's a little bit more noticeable and concerning because it is such a compact game.
I don't know. I mean, like Patrick said, it is that company. It's clearly the B team, but still, it's unusual for Nintendo. But can someone answer my question about the Dungeon Builder?
Oh, I played around with it a little bit. Yeah. It's like a modular, you just take like rooms and kind of like puzzle them together and then you go through them. I didn't really think it was a huge added value proposition, so I played around with it for a little bit and I was like, I don't know about this. It feels kind of like Zelda Maker Lite to me, like they wanted to maybe give a nod to that space without going all in on it. I don't know. Did anyone else play around with it?
Yeah, there are items to get from it. So if you want to get all the shells or even all the heart containers, you're going to have to at least go, because what Dompei does is he gives you little challenges. So he'll challenge you to sort of play around with dungeon design. He'll challenge you to fill in all the pieces on a heart-shaped dungeon, and you have to figure out how to make all the rooms connect. And you can't have, you know, stairways that lead to nowhere. You can't have rooms with doors that don't go to another room. Everything's got to fit. So there are little challenges that he gives you, and that's supposed to be teaching you how to build. So you can do it either way. Either you can build on your own, or you can do his challenges, which net you items that you, including heart containers and stuff like that, that you might want to get if you're going to go for that stuff.
Which I absolutely will, but I've been saving it for last because it just, in the prospect of a Zelda Maker is so questionable to me in the same way that like so much of Mario Maker turns into a train wreck inevitably. And like, it's easier to find the good maps on Mario Maker 2 than it ever was in 1. But in my mind, I'm like, I can't even imagine how out of control like Zelda Maker would be. Can you imagine, like, you walk in and it's just like enemies on every single panel of the dungeon?
It's a pretty low-key thing. I mean, there's not much to it. I can't see too many people getting a ton of use out of it, but there will probably be some people out there who love making dungeons and love sharing them with their friends or something like that and challenging people to them. For me, it's just, I don't know. There's not really a whole lot there. I'm just going to finish off the challenges so that I get everything, and then that's probably the last I'll see of the Dungeon Maker. I do enjoy the game enough that I'm going to, you know, go look for everything. Like I say, my issues were nits. There's no doubt about it. There's no doubt. Although I will say the frame thing is the biggest one, but it's hard not to be a little disappointed. It's a great game, but I feel like it could have been better. That's my ultimate thoughts on this game.
Yeah, and I hear what you're saying, Patrick. I mean, you know, it's like, it's one thing to admire the aspects of the old design that keep it charming. It's another thing for them to make a new game and not put a proper amount of polish on it. And I can sense it, but it, you know, for me, it just doesn't, it's not bothering me as a somebody who's new to the game either. But I definitely hear what you're saying.
Yeah, no, I feel like those are some valid criticisms as well. Maybe it's more just like, I feel like those are matters almost of preference and perspective than over like the overall quality of the game. They're worth mentioning for people out there that it might impact. But I feel like being overly critical of the game in so many ways it's hard because it's on the Switch, right? It is on the Nintendo Switch, but it does take me back to being a kid and playing it on the Game Boy, and it feels like such a strong callback to the Game Boy title that I want it to feel antiquated. I want it to feel just like Link's Awakening, but with that fresh coat of paint, right? They just called in some Inklings to paint it up real quick. And I really like that feel of it. So for me, it feels like quintessential Zelda. It feels like what every top-down Zelda game should be, and what some have never quite lived up to. Like there are the greats. There's the Link's Awakening in my eyes, A Link to the Past, A Link Between Worlds, and then there are the really goods but not greats. You know, the Oracle titles or Minish Cap. And I feel like this is what everyone should aspire to be, and how fleshed out it is, how full the world feels, and how distinct it feels. It's such a unique voice in Zelda that I can't help but just love this game.
I got a real soft spot for Minish Cap. I don't know why. I just love getting small. But, yeah, I hear you.
I wonder if it would have worked better if they had kept the whole game locked at 30 frames per second and not tried to go for 60, because if it drops to 30, but then the whole entire game is at 30, then we wouldn't maybe be complaining. Because I think it would still work with the actual art style and aesthetic of the game.
I don't know if that makes any sense. I think that it's the change that's jarring. And had it been locked at 30, yeah, I think that probably would have helped quite a bit.
And are you guys seeing this primarily when you're docked or undocked?
I saw it more docked. The smaller screen definitely. I ended up playing the last half of it purely on handheld because
That's how to play it, man. I'm telling you.
It was bugging me on my TV screen. Like, it looks gorgeous when you're just standing there, or once once it's caught up, because these frame drops are only for a few seconds. But if you're running around the map, you just see them constantly. That's all. But then the game catches up and it plays fine again. It's gorgeous on a television.
Yeah.
Except for the frame drops.
I still like the way it moves, because, for example, like when you run, like Link can continue running until like eventually you hit a wall or hit a tree or whatever it is. But you can actually keep running even if you move from one section of the map to the next section of the map. Little things like that. I like the fact that you can mark the entire map so you remember where everything is. It's like, and you can use specific like icons. It's like, here's where I have like a heart container, but I can't reach it right away, so I'm going to come back later to get that heart container. Like, there's all of these little things about it. The other thing that I find really weird is a lot of people are complaining about the claw machine. And I don't know if it's just because, like, in real life, I'm actually good at using the claw machines, but I only lost twice. And every time I used a claw machine, I was able to get whatever it was I wanted to get.
It was a little bit goofy, but maybe true to life, maybe too true to life. But like, complaining about it in my mind seems like such utter nonsense, just because it costs nothing to play that game. And like, I don't know where you guys ended up, but once I hit the like Rapids mini game, I was like swimming in rupees, so it didn't matter how many rupees I lost later on. Just because, like, I built up such a big wallet. I don't know.
Yeah, I'm also very good at the claw game. Naturally, I have no problem with it. I think I got everything I needed. I was like, claw game's easier. This is easier than real life claw games. I play a lot of claw games though.
Yeah, me too. Yeah, I finished the game right before we started recording, but I have like 2 save points, and so I'm probably gonna go back and try to 100% complete it. I didn't 100% complete. I'm missing 3 hearts. But I'm not entirely sure what else I'm missing, because I think I've done it all.
You got all the seashells?
Yeah. seashells, all the plushie dolls. I don't know. It's just three hearts for some reason. I just
and
like.
And that's where the like quality of life improvements, I feel like, can't be overstated, in that you can look those things up in your game and like see what you've gotten, and it keeps count. And I found all of that experience really, really wonderful, because you can check in your memories to see what you've already gotten. So I'm like not saying like get on a guide and go look for the answers, but it's really, really easy to do that in this game. I'm trying to play absolutely blind, but I do know that.
I had to use a guide, though. You know why? I don't know if you guys had to use a guide, because I played the original and everything, but I had two problems. There was the problem I asked Patrick on Workplace, because to be fair, I was really sick and everything. I had this like problem where I couldn't figure out the simplest thing. It was one of those issues where it's right in front of your face, and you should be able to see it, but for whatever reason, you're missing the most obvious like hint. But the problem I had was, like, you know when there's a door at the bottom of the screen and or you're supposed to blow up the wall? There was three times where I couldn't see the bloody door, including one door which you didn't have to blow up. It's just at the bottom of the screen, and I kept walking back and forth past it. It was up at the mountaintop. You too, right?
The Eagle Tower. I was so mad at that. I still think that's a cheap door. I always did in the Game Boy version too. You have to blow this thing up or you can't complete the stage, and it gives you no indication. It's on the, like you said, it's on the bottom of the screen, so it's the hardest one to see. Like, you just don't always look at the bottom of the screen for a blow-up door. And where it is, it's just kind of a cheap spot. That's the only dungeon that I still don't really like is the Eagle's Tower. I like the conceit of it. I think it's a great idea. I don't like the execution. But all the other dungeons I thought were great.
I don't like the Eagle's Tower dungeon either, and I don't like the mini-bosses and the boss in that dungeon. My favorite dungeon, I think, is the Colored Dungeon.
That's a fun one. For sure.
I don't know if you guys felt this way either. There are some that I feel like are like really, really strong, solid puzzles the whole way through, and they'll last you a good like 45 minutes to an hour. There, maybe it was like, I can't remember if it was like the fourth or the fifth one, and maybe it's just because I played this game and it comes back faster than other times. There's one dungeon that I blew through in like 20 minutes, it felt like. I can't remember which one though. That like, I remember all of these being so substantial, and then this one I just absolutely demolished as soon as I walked in.
I think you're talking about Dungeon 4.
It might be Dungeon 4.
Which is the shortest, and Dungeon 6 feels, I think, is the longest.
Yeah.
They feel pretty breezy in general to me. I don't think it's a bad thing, though. I mean, I like their designs, but maybe it's just a product of the fact that I've played a lot of Zelda, but I have not played these dungeons before, but I pinged through them pretty quickly. There was one puzzle I got stuck on pretty early on because it was an unfamiliar puzzle type to me, and I guess the owl had given me the hint, and I somehow missed it when I had to, like, kill three enemies in a certain order, and it took me like way too long.
That's what Rick was talking about.
I was like, what am I not understanding about this? And because like there's like we understand like inherently a language of Zelda, I think. And I was like, this is not in my Zelda vocabulary. And I looked that up.
Such a good puzzle.
The one where you put it in order?
Yeah, you had to like
kill enemies in a certain
order, and I was like, I just couldn't figure it out.
Well, I had my sound volume down, so I didn't hear the buzzer.
Oh, okay. You didn't hear the buzzer. Yeah, the buzzer was the good indication. I mean, I remember
buzz. I did not hear the buzzer either. I didn't know that. Oh, wow, that's funny. Yeah, that would do it.
That was one I remembered. The Eagle Rock one, I just always forget. I always forget the order. That dungeon to me is so confusing because you have to fiddle with those switches as well, with the blocks that go up and down, the different colored blocks, along with doing several. Hauling that giant ball around to smash the pillars. It just gets, it's a lot to think about, to keep in your head all at once. And there's several floors too. So I kept thinking, like, do I need to drop down somewhere to get to that fourth pillar? How do I get to that fourth pillar? Anyway, I had to guide it. I had to look it up. The only thing I had to look up, but I had to do it finally.
Yeah, I looked up that problem that I had. I felt my gamer shame, but I was like, I hit the wall here.
I want to finish up just asking, plain and simple, how overall, like, we've nitpicked, we've talked ad nauseum about how we feel about this game. I just want to know ultimate final thoughts on this game. How do you like it? We don't often do a lot of, like, ratings on the show, But where does this kind of stand with you in terms of like a Zelda experience, a Switch experience? There's a lot of old feelings and a lot of new feelings because it's the newest console. So let's start with Patrick. Final thoughts on Link's Awakening.
I think as a Zelda game, it's a 9, and the base game, I mean. I think as a remake, it's a, I don't want to go 7. I'd go like an 8 at the most, though. It's like kind of in between for me. I did feel legit. I mean, I felt a little disappointed, that's all, in the presentation, in the polish. But as a base game, and with the base game still there, I think it's a 9 for sure.
All right, and Marty, as a newcomer, how about you?
Yeah, as a newcomer, I mean, it's funny. I come at it with my own sort of weird bias because I'm a huge Zelda fan, but this is the one that I had never played. And I'm not done with it yet, admittedly, but I feel like I understand the game and its world pretty well and its mechanics. And I'm just in love with it. I'm savoring every moment of it. I love the look and the feel that they used for the treatment. I'm really enjoying the overworld in particular. I love the density of the map. I love the secrets. I love all the little corners, all the weird things. So yeah, I don't know. If I were rating it in the series, I don't know. I don't know if anything could quite reach the heights for me for A Link to the Past. Link Between Worlds is also, oof, it's tight. I'll have to report back to you on where it stands for me between it and Link Between Worlds. But it's certainly in that top tier for me already. I loved it. And yeah, I would give it a 9 if we were on a numbering schedule here.
Yeah, and Ricky D.
So I think that because this game exists, I would never recommend anyone to play the original because the quality of life improvements are just too good that it makes the game more fun to play. Unless, of course, you're curious about the original or you write about video games and whatever, you need to have knowledge of how video games used to be compared to them today for whatever reason, right? But I'm just saying, like, say like a newcomer to the Zelda series, I wouldn't like give them the Game Boy version. This is probably the best game to give like a first timer to like the Zelda franchise because it's not really hard. Like, it's actually a little too easy on the remake, I feel, because the old game you can get frustrated with changing like items and you can like die because of like the limitations of the technology at the time. But in this game, it just like everything runs so smooth that it is a little too easy. But I think Patrick's rating is actually spot on. Has a remake an 8 and has an actual Zelda game a 9. All I want to say is that I think what I like most about this game is the charm, the characters, the narrative, the story, and the ending. And I think it has like the best ending of any Zelda game. And I just like how simple it is. And I like the fact that, it does take place in a dream and there's different ways in which you can like interpret what exactly is happening. And it's just really odd and because it has all like Goombas and the Piranha Plant and shows up and there's a Yoshi plushie and all this like random weirdness. But That's the thing about this game. Like, it's quirky, it's weird, it's charming, it is what it is. It's its own beast, and yet at the same time, it's so similar to those original like Zelda games on a Super Nintendo and Nintendo.
Yeah, I'm gonna kind of continue that thought and just say that I think that this is again the perfect encapsulating of the original game with a lot of polish and new features to just overall make the experience so much more user friendly. And I like the adherence to the original. It feels very much like Link's Awakening on the Game Boy, but on current hardware. They keep some of the structure, they keep some of the rigidity, and I think it's a really, really cool experience to have that on the Switch. And I think that this is the way to play Link's Awakening, so I think that this will remain my favorite game, period. So that fever dream is over. We're going to take a break. Link's Awakening is going away when we come back. EB Games. Don't go anywhere. Thank you. N-Express. We're at our final segment, a quick one. A discussion, Rick, that you brought to the table concerning EB Games.
So it's something that's been really bugging me for the entire year. And the reason why I want to discuss it today is because I think Marty had a similar situation happen to him last week. So here's the thing. You know I love buying physical games, right? So earlier in the year, when Devil May Cry 5 came out, I went to EB Games to buy a copy on PlayStation. And they refused to sell me the game because I went there on day one. And according to the clerk at EB Games here in Montreal, they do not sell the game to customers unless you pre-ordered it on day one, which makes no sense to me because I was like, I can understand if like you sold out all of your copies, but they didn't. They had plenty of copies because I can see it behind the counter. And they also advertised the game on the shelf. And here in Montreal, there is a law. There's plenty of laws to protect consumers. But you can't advertise something on the shelf if you're not actually selling it. And there's other things, too. Like, you have to put the price on every single item. Otherwise, like, you know, whatever. Like, you can get penalized or blah, 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 blah. So the thing is, the game's on the shelf. There's a bunch of copies behind the counter. And the dude refuses to sell me a game. So I went home and it was the first big AAA title this generation that I actually purchased. I got a digital download of, right? Instead of, because I just like, whatever, I couldn't find it anywhere else. So then fast forward a few months later, I go to EB, I don't go to EB Games. I go to Best Buy and I want to buy Sekiro, but I want to buy in PlayStation, but they only have it on Xbox because all the PlayStation copies sold out. So I went to a few stores. It was sold out everywhere on PlayStation. So I went to EB Games. This exact same thing happened. They had copies. They were not sold out, but they refused to sell me the game because I did not pre-order it, which makes no sense. I was like, you have copies there. And so they're like, come back tomorrow or Sunday. I'm like, why? Like, why don't you just sell it to me now? So I think the exact same thing happened to Marty.
Yeah, dude, it was a total bummer, honestly. I'm similar, though. I've kind of like transitioned in the new generation of games kind of out of necessity. So traditionally, I would almost always buy physical. I started slowly getting more downloads. And then since I've been on the Switch, I've been doing more and more downloads, with the notable exception of AAA first-party Nintendo games, which I like to own generally. And in particular, I like to do that with a Zelda game. Like, it's a franchise that I love. I love to have, like, the cartridge, blah, blah, blah. You guys get that stuff. So, yeah, I didn't pre-order it because in the past when I've just like walked into a GameStop on day of, like in the morning, I've been like, hey, let me get Link's Awakening. I know it's here. And they've sold it to me. And I walked into a GameStop morning of, I was like, hey, can I get a Link's Awakening? No line, no nothing. You know, nothing's going on. It was the same day the Switch Lite was coming out. So some people were buying Switch Lite and I was looking at it thinking it was cool. Kinda. Yeah, he's like, did you pre-order it? And I was like, no. He's like, oh, sorry. No, we don't have any then. And I actually laughed out loud. I was like, are you serious? He's like, no, sorry. We don't have it. And I was like, well, that's very silly because I'm going to go home and download it and not buy it from you. And they're like, yeah, sorry. And so that's what happened. And it's, you know, it just seems indicative of changing times. Like, I'm somebody who wanted to buy the physical copy and was pushed into digital. And I guess that's just what's happening.
Was he rude to you?
He was a little rude. Yeah, he was. Yeah.
So here's the thing about EB Games. Not only do they have this stupid policy, which I'm going to get to shortly, but I find every time I go to EB Games, and I know I'm not alone because I swear to God, if I had a dollar for every time someone here in Montreal said this, I can go out and buy a PlayStation. Like, hundreds of times people have said they don't like going to EB Games because the people are so rude. Now, the thing is, I was told from this guy who used to work at EB Games that there's multiple reasons why they have this stupid policy. But one of the reasons, apparently, is because, and again, I don't know if this is true. This is what the guy told me. He's like, yeah, they have the games. They just don't want to sell you the games because they want to encourage people to pre-order games because it helps them with their inventory. But also because they're afraid that if a game gets like a bad review score or bad review scores across like the internet, right? Or bad, something happens. Like, maybe it's not even a bad review, but maybe there's a bug or like it needs a patch or something. Then they're afraid that people won't go buy it right away. And then they might not ever buy it at EB Games and just like either change their mind or go to another store or buy it later in a week or buy it when it's on discount. And so that's why they are trying to like encourage slash force people to pre-order games. And the thing is, it's like, I hate to say this, because like, I prefer to go to an actual retail store and talk to someone in person and pick up a physical copy of a video game and interact with people. But I refuse to shop at EB Games or GameStop, same company, just because of their policies and because I find they're so damn rude. And then a lot of people, there's a lot of talk recently about the company itself because, you know, they're closing down stores, people are losing their jobs, and that sucks. You know, I don't want anyone to lose their jobs. But I wonder, like, maybe if you just had better customer service, maybe you would be making more money or better policies. Because the thing is, I would prefer to just order my game on Amazon or Best Buy and it gets shipped to my house the morning of or the night before than have to deal with their BS and clerks that are incredibly rude and their stupid policies. And that's why I don't shop at EB Games.
I'll say this one thing. This kid was rude. He was. But he was rude in this way that like felt like he was frustrated that he has to say this to people. I do have to say that in general, I've had good experience with GameStop clerks. They're nice. They're gamers. They're weird. The last time I bought a first party game was like Mario Kart, and like there was no line, and they were like, let's play, you know, like I had a great time with that experience. So I've had mostly good experiences with them, but that was a bummer for me, and I feel like I'm probably not gonna even try to buy a physical copy. Like Luigi's Mansion is the next game that comes out, and for me that would be like that, and I'll probably just download it, I guess. I don't know.
So do you guys not have some sort of larger retailer that's not specialized to video games? Like I know if I want a very specific edition, like I wanted the Dreamware edition, so I actually pre-ordered, but most of the time I can dependably just go to a general, like, large scale retailer. I know, Rick, you don't have Targets, but I'm pretty sure everyone else does in the US. I go to something like a place like Target, which is just a big retailer of everything.
We have Targets in New York. We have big retailers here, but like they're a mess for video games. Those departments are always like way behind the line when stuff is releasing. So like if you show up, you're just walking into like a chaos storm. It's nuts here. With respect to our Targets.
It was the same in Montreal. We used to have Target, and they were always like 2 weeks behind in their shipments. So like you would go to the store to buy a game that would, you know, was supposed to be released on that day, and they're like, no, you have to come back in 2 weeks. But here's the weird thing. When I went to Toys R Us to buy Devil May Cry 5, they do not sell Capcom games. There's specific companies that they don't work with. I don't know why. Like, maybe they had a falling out with these companies. I have no idea. So there's specific companies, the guy told me, and Capcom is one of them. They do not sell their games. And if I go to Walmart, they are also behind. They're behind by 1 or 2 weeks in releases. So that leaves me with EB Games or Best Buy, or I have to shop online. So, no, there isn't many choices.
Yeah, that's unfortunate, and that's like really weird because I feel like I could go so many different places here and get a game day of.
And I'm sorry, Tim, remind me, where are you?
Seattle area.
Oh, interesting. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Worst case scenario, I drive to Redmond, I go to the front door of Nintendo of America, I just pound on it. It's like, give me the games.
So where do you buy your games though? EB Games? GameStop?
GameStop, if I want a pre-order, or it's something that's so niche, I can't depend on it being at a general store. But Target, most of the time, I'll just go, you know, first thing in the morning, roll in, grab whatever game I want, and walk out.
And you guys don't have like this problem with the clerks or the attitude and/or the policies?
I go to GameStop. I wouldn't say all of them are friendly, but I've never had anybody be rude. And I have heard the thing, like, they've told me before that, you know, I was lucky I pre-ordered because they only get 5 copies, and I asked them about that, and apparently, like, at least my store, they said they barely get copies for games unless it's Smash Brothers or Mario Kart, you know, an absolutely massive one. So for something like Link's Awakening, I'm sure they only got a few copies. I just pre-order the ones I know I'm going to want. Like Luigi's Mansion, I'm not going to have to worry about that because I know I'm going to want it. So I just pre-ordered it. But yeah, I've never had them be super rude. I know it's supposedly not a great company to work for either in those stores. That's the word, that they don't treat the employees all that great. That's what I've heard, again, to protect, you know, us. But so that could contribute to the sour moods of some people, I suppose. I don't know. I've had some people not be friendly, but I've never had anybody be rude.
Well, that's the thing. I think you nailed it. Is I think the reason why I always encounter clerks who are usually grumpy and are rude is because they always have to deal with the same reoccurring questions, which might be really annoying for them because it's based on whatever stupid policies GameStop has implemented. But like, it's still your job, and like, you know what I mean? You should not lash out on me because, yeah, maybe 100 people asked the exact same question, but it wasn't like I asked you a question 100 times back to back. You know what I mean? So you should still be polite to me. But my biggest problem is just the policy and the fact that they don't order enough games. Like, it kind of makes me wonder, like, how do you like run a business? Like, your whole business revolves around, you know, the video game industry. Like, they don't sell DVDs here in Montreal at EB Games. EB Games, by the way, is the same as GameStop. They don't sell, like, they sell like toys and stuff, but everything's related to video games. So it's like, if you're not selling video games, or if you're not ordering enough video games, then, like, you know, of course people are going to go to Best Buy or Amazon or the internet to buy the product. So bizarre.
With the way they're set up too, the strong majority of their profits come from reselling games as opposed to selling them first. That makes
That's
sense.
A good point. Mm-hmm.
So it's not their priority to provide. They want you to come in to pre-order with them, and they want you to come in and trade games in towards those new pre-orders so that they have a guaranteed sale and that they also can then resell those games at a higher profit for them because they're being resold and they don't have to send any of that money to the makers of those games at that point. So that's why a lot of these policies are in place at retailers specific like that.
But they're in trouble. I mean, it's like been reported that they're having problems as a company.
Oh, absolutely.
I think that's exaggerated though, because like I read somewhere online where they were talking about how much money they actually made. And yeah, they closed down a bunch of stores, but they just so happened to close down the stores that weren't doing very well. But they still have like thousands of stores across, you know, the United States and Canada, and they're making a lot of money. Like, it's not as bad as people think it is. It's not like Toys R Us where, like, I think Toys R Us closed down everywhere in the States, right?
Yeah. Well, and they just acquired that. Was it Fangamer? Or I can't remember which company, but some of like the merchandise they were selling in GameStop, they just
something
recently
geek.
Oh, ThinkGeek. It was that one. They just outright purchased them and now have 100% profit on everything that used to be ThinkGeek. It's just GameStop now. So yeah, you have to wonder how much they're struggling if they're capable of doing that.
Yeah, it sucks. I guess I'll just close off by saying, like, I kind of still want something like GameStop, you know, around. Like, I wouldn't want every single sort of, like, store like that to close down because it's still nice to go out and meet someone in public and talk about video games and buy an actual physical copy and not have to just rely on the internet to order things. But I don't know. I kind of feel like, at least here in Montreal, they really do need to change the way they treat customers and their policies. That's all.
Well, yeah. I hope we see the rise of a mom and pop version of it. Honestly, I mean that's what New York needs, because like it's like GameStop doesn't serve our needs. They're kind of like everywhere, but they're not that good. So if there was an independent game store I could just go to, I would support it. Like bookstores, you know. That's what I hope we see happen.
Yeah. So here's to hoping. But I think that does it for our show. Marty, thank you so much for being here. Thank you for also playing Link's Awakening for the first time and having the right perspective on it. Where can we find you online?
Take my name, Marty, and put the word stuff after it, and then there's a .com. That's where you find the heart of my things, and you can find me on Instagram and places like that, or writing for Goomba Stomp, because that's the greatest place to write things for.
Fact. Patrick Murphy, where can we find you?
Always writing at GoombaStomp.com, on Twitter at Sorted Cinema. We've wrapped up some film festivals, but we're about to start more film festivals, so you can always keep an eye on the Sorted Cinema section of the site for plenty of movie stuff.
Seriously, more movie stuff than game stuff right now. It's out of control.
It's busy, or at least it was. It'll calm down eventually, though.
You guys are working so hard, but you're doing really great work, so keep it up. Ricky D., where can we find you?
GoombaStomp.com, clearly. You can find me handling the official Twitter account for GoombaStomp. And like us on Facebook, follow us on, I don't know, social media. You can listen to our show on iTunes, Stitcher, Podbean, of course, on the website. And if you do listen to the show and like what you hear, please leave us a rating.
Yeah, it seriously, it gives us a happier feeling than finding a secret shell or a heart piece. It's that good. I'm Tim Mason. You can find me at The Freemason, M-A-I-S-O-N. Check out my work on GoombaStomp, my other show, Game Boys, where it was not like coming back to Zelda. It was like going back to a franchise that I don't like. I had to play Gears of War, which I don't like, and I'm very vocal about. And go check out my thoughts on the new one. You might be surprised. Thank you so much for listening. It's always been our favorite thing to do, talk about Nintendo games. We're glad that you like to listen to it. And hopefully we don't get too critical of some of these games. And hopefully we're critical enough of other ones. And you're all in agreement. But if you aren't, let us know. We'd love to hear from you. And we'll be back next week with something totally different as we talk all things Nintendo. We'll talk to you then.